Here's Pastor Brian as he continues this week's study.
Welcome to the program today. And in the last 2 weeks, we've been looking at the doctrine of baptism and refuting the idea that baptism is necessary for salvation. In our study yesterday, we analyzed 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21, to show that it clearly does not teach that baptism is necessary for salvation. Today, we'll continue to look at this verse and offer some of the other ways this passage has been interpreted to refute this concept. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21 reads as follows. There is also an antitype which now saves us, namely baptism, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience towards God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. In our last study, we focused on the meaning of the word antitype and showed the connection Peter was trying to make between that of baptism and salvation. We also looked at Peter's own explanation that he was not referring to water baptism as that which saves, since he tells us right there in the text, it's not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And our study yesterday focused on how baptism is a symbol of salvation, that it represents our identification with Christ in his death, burial, and resurrection. In our study today, I want to offer you some other ways in which this passage has been explained. The obvious issue here is that on the surface, it appears that Peter could be saying that baptism brings about salvation. Another way to respond to that false idea is that by looking at the context, the passage is not referring here to salvation, but sanctification or our growth in holiness. I personally prefer to understand this as a reference to salvation and then link baptism as a symbol or type or a copy of salvation. But this other position that we'll look at has its merits as well as good scholarship supporting this concept. Today, 4 points will be offered to support the interpretation that what Peter has in mind is the topic of sanctification. The first point is understanding the meaning of the word save or salvation in the New Testament. I want to read verse 20 and then the first part of 21, where Peter says, "Who formerly were disobedient, when once the long-suffering of God waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, 8 souls, were saved through the water. There is also an antitype which now saves us." Now, the meaning of the word save or salvation in the New Testament has several different meanings. It's not always referring to salvation. For example, the word can mean to be saved from physical harm, as in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 25, also from anguish and suffering in John 12 verse 27, or from evil deeds in 2 Timothy 4:18, or from oppression in Jude verse 5, or from sickness in James chapter 5 verse 15, as well as many other references. I think one of the clearest ones is 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, which says that women can be saved through childbirth, and nobody would ever apply this to salvation by giving birth to babies. As the passage reads, "Nevertheless, she'll be saved in childbearing." So we need to realize that the term saved or salvation has different meanings, and the context will determine the meaning or the way that word is used in that passage. And there's good scholars that would translate verse 20 rather than as a reference to salvation, but more accurately, 8 persons were brought safely through the flood. The second point would be to once again look at the meaning of the word type here. Thayer, in his lexicon, gives the definition, a thing resembling another. So the question has to be asked, what is the correlation between Noah being saved and that of baptism? And the context definitely focuses on not a message about salvation, but that of sanctification. So there are good scholars who would suggest that the main relationship is that it's a picture of how the ark preserved the people during that time period. And they would see it as a type of leaving the old world or the old life and entering into the new one, or to walk in that newness of life through the power of Jesus Christ. For example, Roger Mayer, in his commentary in 1 Peter, in the Bible Knowledge Commentary, writes, "As the waters of Noah symbolize the break with the old life, so water baptism symbolizes the break from the old sinful nature." And again, it would be focusing on baptism as a figure or a copy or as a type of salvation, going once again back to Romans chapter 6, verse 4 through 6, which is, "Therefore we are buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead, even so we should walk in newness of life." Then verse 6 says, "Knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves of sin." So some would see here this baptism now as a symbol of that old man dying and us being raised to newness of life, and now we're to walk in this newness of life. And that would fit the very context of Peter's point in this passage. The third point is focusing on the context of 1 Peter in general, or the main message of the book, as well as looking at the immediate context of 1 Peter chapter 3. It's very clear as one reads 1 Peter, the main message or the theme is an exhortation to continue to live a godly life even in the midst of persecution. And the immediate context bears this out in that it's not teaching how a person is to get saved, but how to live a godly life in the midst of persecution. For example, a simple outline of 1 Peter chapter 3 through chapter 4 verse 6 all communicate the same point. In chapter 3, verses 13 through 17, the believers are exhorted to live a godly life even in the midst of persecution. Verse 18, Jesus Christ is set up as the example of this. Verses 19 and 20, Noah is an example of godly living in the midst of opposition. Then verse 21, baptism is then used as a symbol to represent our need to live a godly life. And then picking it up in chapter 3, verse 22 through 42, Christ again is seen as the example of living a godly life in the midst of persecution. Then verses 3 through 6, there's that general exhortation to live a godly life in the midst of opposition. So the immediate context is not talking about how someone is to be saved, but the aspect of sanctification or how to live a godly life in the midst of opposition. In the immediate context, Noah is used as an example of that godly life in the midst of an unbelieving and hostile world, yet he was spared and the rest died in the flood. Then Peter uses the flood and Noah as an example that somehow relates to baptism and the believer. The flood was not the thing that saved Noah, but was the means to bring judgment upon the wicked. The flood didn't save Noah from his sins, but from the judgment of God upon the world and their influence upon him. And so in that sense, baptism and what it represents, our identification, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, as we are raised, we're to walk in newness of life, to picture a judgment upon one's old life and one's sinful self, and then baptism is a symbol which communicates our newness of life, then is also a picture or an exhortation to help us to flee temptation, not give into temptation. Because it's obvious, according to Genesis chapter 7, verse 1, that Noah lived a righteous life long before the flood ever came about. Then interesting, in 2 Peter chapter 2, Noah is also used an example of being spared from God's wrath in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. And then the two points that Peter's trying to bring out is communicated to us in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, which reads, "Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment." So the example of Noah in 2 Peter is not that example of salvation, but the fact that God knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations. And it is a possibility, that's Peter's exact point here in 1 Peter chapter 3, that baptism reemphasizes or communicates to the believer that we're identified in the resurrection power of Christ. And now as we look back at baptism, it symbolizes to us that God has given us the power to resist temptation and not to live a life of compromise. And the fourth point ties right into this, where in verse 21, he says, "Not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience towards God." And that word answer has been translated as the word pledge. We need to understand what this Greek term meant in the first century. It's the Greek word epirathema and was a business term which was used in a business transaction. The buyer would say a pledge like, "I promise to abide by the terms of this contract." And this was done in the front of witnesses, and then the contract was sealed. In a spiritual sense, we seal the contract by being baptized, saying, "I accept salvation on God's terms in his death, burial, and resurrection," and it's a pledge of a good conscience to live a godly life. Because salvation is not just receiving the benefits and forgiveness, but it's also that commitment to the Lord to live a godly life and to follow in his footsteps. And just as this pledge was given in the midst of witnesses, so is our pledge in baptism. It's that outward pledge that we're trusting in the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, and that we're going to follow in his footsteps to live a godly life. And Peter's point here is, he's saying, look back at baptism. It was that pledge that you made to God to live a godly life, and now that you're in the midst of persecution, don't abandon that. So in this sense, as we look back on our baptism, it helps to save us or encourage our hearts not to give in to temptation or compromise, even in the midst of trials and opposition. An alternative possibility to understanding this verse has been offered by Albert Barnes, who sees the word pledge as communicating the idea of a question. And it would relate to the question imposed upon the person who is being baptized. For example, in Acts chapter 8, verse 37, where Philip was about to baptize a eunuch, the verse reads as follows. "Then Philip said, 'If you believe with all your heart, you may.' And he answered and said, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. So it is possible that there was a pledge or the answer to that question. Do you believe on the Lord Jesus Christ? And if they were to affirm that, then they were to be baptized. So it is possible that that's what Peter had in mind as well. When you put 1 Peter chapter 3 in the context of sanctification, what he's saying is, think back on that pledge that you made of that answer towards God of putting your trust in Jesus Christ and his resurrection, or if it was that answer to a question given to someone when they were baptized, he says, think about what you were communicating at that point. And now you're in the midst of persecution and opposition. Don't compromise your faith and don't live an ungodly life, because that's completely contrary to the message of what baptism communicates. I do believe there is value on looking back at our baptism as not just as a rite or a ritual that we went through that communicated salvation. It can also be used to be looking back at that point that we were publicly demonstrating our faith in Jesus Christ, not just our faith that he brought about salvation, but he also raised us so that we could walk in newness of life. And that now encourages my heart in the present to live a godly life. And that may be the very thing that Peter's trying to communicate here in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. It's definitely not communicating the idea that an individual has to be baptized in order to be saved, or that baptism brings about forgiveness, or that baptism brings about salvation. Now, the common thread of the last 2 days has been to offer proof that this passage does not teach that one is to be baptized to be saved. The passage either uses baptism as a symbol of the true salvation which God has accomplished through Jesus Christ and his resurrection, or baptism is used here in the context to remind them of the power that is available to live a godly life in the midst of temptation through the power of the one who has been raised from the dead. Either way, baptism is used as a symbol or picture to communicate a truth and not that which produces salvation in the life of the believer.